This is Scott Richmond.
And Arnie Sherman.
You're listening to What Do You Know on News Talk KGVO, AM 1290 and 98.3 FM. Arnie, good morning to you.
Good morning, Scott. How are you?
I'm doing great, Arnie. And you know, today we are going to kick off a two-part show with Mayor John Engen.
Well, we need a two-part show because there's a lot going on in Missoula.
Yes, I know.
You know, in the Garden City, the River City, the City of Valleys, there's just so much going on. As I was driving over, there's construction cranes everywhere. There are, you know, holes in the ground all across the place. We have new markets opening. We have a new dinner theater that's, you know, sits with screens that sit 900 people.
Right. You like that, right?
Yeah. You know, the old sawmill project is going like gangbusters. They're almost out of product over there in terms of condos. And wow. Now in August, the new mixed use building is going to open. The student housing project Rome is getting ready to go.
Yeah.
We're going to be breaking ground at some time in the near future on the east side of town, on the Fox Theater. There's just so much.
And the Merck.
The Merck's
coming in. Not to mention the Merck.
The Merck, you know, several hundred rooms downtown, three or four new restaurants.
Yep.
I mean, the town is booming along. At the same time, you know, we're dealing with lots of other issues in, you know, that every other city has to deal with, like, you know, drug problem that's, you know, cutting across every economic group and every city in the country. We have problems, you know, making sure our schools are safe.
Sure.
You know, we have the problems of the impact of tax cuts and whether they produce any revenue or how are we going to build an infrastructure to support all this is going on. Historically, it's always been a city, state, federal partnership among all three.
Right.
But, you know, it hasn't been that way for a while. And our infrastructure's, you know, crumbling.
Right.
I mean, not just in Missoula. I mean, across the country. You drive through the Midwest, or I was just recently down in the South, driving through the South, it almost, in places, looks like a third world country.
Is that right?
Compared to if you go to Europe, for example.
Sure.
You drive around Europe, whether you're in Germany or Italy or France, the highways are great. They have high-speed trains connecting. You know, you can go from Paris to, you know, Amsterdam in 4 hours. You know, you can go to country to country easily. And you drive around, and the roads have potholes, and the bridges are old. And
is that right? Oh, yeah. So infrastructure needs to be replaced in markets,
all across the country.
Across the country,
we have a lot of crumbling infrastructure.
Okay.
And we have our share of it here. Bridges have to be repaired here. We have roads that need to be repaired. We still have potholes left over from the winter. We have all those sorts of things, and a portfolio for a mayor is so broadly expansive. It's in some ways a tougher job than being a governor or a senator, or president.
I think that's right. And what's nice about speaking to our mayor, and that we'll give him, we have a little more real estate to play with this time around, is we can talk about a variety of issues, but also, you know, the hot button issues, while important, there are a lot of other issues that he deals with that are not so sexy that we can bring up with him. And I think that's good, right? I think we give him a little more opportunity to do that. So that's a good thing.
Yeah, well, I think we're more interested in the future than in the past.
Right. Let's look forward.
And what is the economic vitality index for a city like Missoula? Standing on its own and not in comparison to anybody else. I mean, I get awful tired of going online, and if you go to your favorite, you know, search engine, or you're looking at your favorite social media, there's always a survey. The 50 best, the 25 best, the 10 worst, about cities and towns. And it's all completely subjective. I mean, there's no way to really evaluate that. And I think we have to look at our own community, you know, on its own.
On its own merit and on its own attributes.
And talk about what's you know, what needs to be done and what's going to be happening. You know, most people, you know, when you hear people talk about or complain, they talk about the way it was in the past, you know, the good old days that may or may not ever have been.
Right.
I remember when I first moved came to Missoula in 1995 and then moved here shortly thereafter. You know, one of the best restaurants in town was Kentucky Fried Chicken. I mean, we had very limited things, you know, so, you know, the Depot was here You can't imagine what the what Finn and Porter's, the predecessor to Finn and Porter's, was a dark room with an organ in the corner.
Are you kidding?
I mean, there was not many places to go at that point. at that point in time. And now you come and, you know, you have everything pretty much that you can get everywhere
squared
else.
Away.
Plus, we also have our own local entrepreneurs like, you know, Five on Black and other restaurants that are, that have a unique Missoula character to them
and taste. Well, Arnie, when we come back, we're gonna venture outside of the studios of What Do You Know to meet up with Mayor John Engen.
Go right down to his office. Get the guy right where he works.
Exactly, on the corner of Ryman and Spruce. Back after this with Mayor John Engen.
Okay. We are here in Mayor John Engen's office right now. We are fortunate enough to be with Mayor Engen. Hi, Mayor Engen.
Good afternoon. Thanks for coming.
It's good to see you.
Thanks for coming to City Hall.
And it's pretty exciting.
I've never been to City Hall, actually. I didn't get
Well, there's a
here.
Jail downstairs. You haven't been there before.
And we
the
have,
police department downstairs.
Wait a minute, but there's another visitor in the office here. We have Libby.
Libby's here.
Who's Libby?
Libby is a rescued miniature poodle from the Humane Society of Western Montana, and she is my constant companion.
Very nice. She's adorable. Looks like she was groomed, too.
She gets groomed occasionally. We like to keep the hairstyle similar.
That's true.
No fuss.
Is some similarity, but we won't get into that.
But what's nice, one quick thing, where for those of our listeners that haven't been to City Hall, we're right here on the corner of Ryman and, what is this?
Spruce.
Okay, it's beautiful. It has a beautiful view of the L and the M and...
N-O-P. L-M-N-O-P.
You're right, but it's a beautiful office. It's nice to be here. Thanks for having us.
Lovely, comfortable office.
So, John, the first thing is, you know, driving over, we drove over from the studio over Reserve Street. There's a lot of stuff going on.
There's a lot of stuff going on.
How do you stay on top of all of this? I mean, you got Lucky's Market that's new, and that's attracting a lot of people. There's cranes all over town. This looks like, you know, New York in its heyday. What's going on here?
Well, if we had been having this conversation in 2008 or 2009, and someone had told me that in 2018 there'd be three cranes or four cranes in the air in Missoula, Montana, I'd have thought, well, that would be wonderful.
What are they demolishing?
Right, but as it turns out, a bunch of folks in this community, both in the public and private sector, have invested in planning. And we've made investments in infrastructure, and we've created partnerships with the private sector, and a lot of stuff is happening.
And new companies are coming here.
New companies are coming. We just had a really interesting community conversation last week. Under the auspices of Innovate UM, we had upwards of 250 people over the course of 2 days talking about the opportunities in Missoula for innovation, and that innovation ranges from tech companies to human services to housing to transportation, and the enthusiasm and energy in that room was palpable. We talked to business folks who have landed here from the Silicon Valley for all sorts of reasons.
Israel,
again, for
it's
all sorts of reasons.
It's a little bit off the map for Israel to find their way here.
It is, but, you know, it turns out if you can do business anywhere in the world and you can do it in a place that's pleasant, if you can do it in a place that has planned and made investment in the nuts and bolts of the community, and you have a solid workforce, it turns out that's a recipe for success.
Well, ask a quick question about the Missoula Economic Partnership, the MEP. Since the last time we spoke, it's changed a bit. And we've had Jeff on a few times, Jeff Fee on a few times to talk with us. What's the plan for MEP?
So we think we're at, so I sit on the board, was one of the founders. We think that we're in a position to reorganize a little bit. We've got we just commissioned a dust-off of a study that helped us launch the partnership in 2010. What we've seen is many of the things called for in that plan have come to pass. So we're really looking at MEP 2.0 or whatever it is the young technological people might say. And so we're taking a breath in terms of what we're looking for in a new executive. We're taking a breath in terms of what other partnerships might we be able to form that take advantage of economies of scale and some efficiencies that make us more effective. What we don't want and what the partnership was originally about was taking a fragmented economic development environment and defragging it, for lack of a better turn of phrase, making sure that we were more intentional and more effective, that we had a single point of entry for folks who were interested in doing business in Missoula, not only folks who might want to come from elsewhere to do business, but also how do we help homegrown folks. A lot of that has happened. We see, you know, my conversation with our consultant was he's very bullish on Missoula based on what he saw.
Right.
And I think he's going to point us in some directions in terms of opportunity. I think he'll give us some ideas around organization.
So 2.0 is very different than 1.0. It's going to not very different, but it's going to be. It's not necessarily going to look like what it did.
Well,
here's
the thing. It's like pushing this ball up a hill to some extent, or it's, you know, you're getting momentum. Now we have the momentum. We're over the cliff. And when you have companies like ClassPass and Forecast coming here from Israel, and you have some local companies like Submittable and Luminad all growing, that growth stimulates other things happening. It just becomes a catalyst. It becomes like a magnet for other things because people come here and take a look, and they say, well, these guys are growing, and these guys are growing, and this company's growing, and these people are moving here. There's got to be something going on.
But we're also in competition.
Arnie Sherman spokesmodel for
the look, by the way. By the way, he has the look. But we are also in competition with Bozeman. We're in competition with other markets Montana.
But truthfully, we have a lot more to offer than Bozeman in terms of, we have greater size.
I'd like to hear what the mayor has to say.
I will let the mayor's.
See, I told you it'd be a conversation.
I recognize I'm largely superfluous to this conversation.
No, you know, we'll leave and continue this conversation. No, I think you're always in competition in the economic development with a lot of other people.
Right.
But let me just add one thing before I let the mayor talk about this in a serious way. I'm at that age in life, you know, where I'm looking at what, you know, where should I go to retire?
Early 50s,
looking to retire. You know, I won at the Kentucky Derby last year. I have a little, you know, nest egg. I started looking at, you know, the typical places where, you know, when you're looking for amenities, where you're looking for a good quality of life, where you're looking at comfort and ease. You start looking at places, you know, that are mentioned, you know, people here go to Scottsdale, people go to Las Vegas, the Washington, Oregon coast, some people, their retirement places in Savannah. I've gone and looked at all these places. I keep coming back and saying, it's better in Missoula. Except for ice, you know, and black ice and, you know, a little bit of cold in the winter. It gets in your bones when you get older. We have everything that all those other places have. You know, I keep coming back. Why would I leave here?
Largely Montana.
And it's showing up in a lot of the polls, you know, the 20 best small towns to live in. Missoula pops out, but I do want to get back to your question. We do have competition from other places, so how do we deal with that?
So we are more in competition with ourselves than we are with anyone else, I think.
And what do you mean by that?
Yes.
I mean that we are not and will never be Bozeman for all sorts of reasons, organic and otherwise. So what can we do to position ourselves to be an attractive community for the long haul? And provided that we're remembering who we are, that we understand community values, that we focus on those, we plan around them, we're going to do just fine. The old school model of economic development is, I will come to my city. I will give you tax abatements. Basically, you become, you know, the discount city of economic development, And what you get is folks shopping you all day long.
Right.
So you get, you know, and bless their hearts, they've overcome this in Butte. But for a long time, Butte was about we will give you a tax deal. They land a company. That company stays for 3 years until the tax deal is gone, and then they find the better tax deal in another state.
And that's the kind of tenant you get. That's the kind of tenant.
Exactly.
So very transitory.
Right. And so what we're attracting are folks who want to be here largely. I mean, it's not as squishy as you might think. Quality of life actually matters
sure.
to people. And as these more sophisticated companies, homegrown like Submittable, or from elsewhere like ClassPass, look to recruit talent, it ain't just about money anymore. It's about where these folks can build a life. And these companies want to be part of the community. I mean, the conversation I had with Fritz Landman from ClassPass is, so we've discovered you, now I don't want anyone else to.
Right.
I mean, he's being facetious, of course, but he is interested in those community values and preserving that quality of life, and that's kind of our
selling
point.
And he doesn't want competition for his workforce.
And there's an underbelly to that I want to talk about, which you hear. I just heard it today from somebody. They're excited that ClassPass is coming.
Here?
Well, yeah, they go and look online, and the sales and marketing jobs, some of them that were advertised, are capped at $30,000 a year. Two things that were said to me that I'd like you to respond to. One is, are these companies coming here because they think they can cut their labor costs substantially compared to other big cities? And then secondly, how can we afford to live in Missoula, even if two of us are making $30,000 a year at ClassPass? You know, the housing costs here are going up so that, you know, the average house, and some people aspire to have more than the average home,
right,
is almost, you know, $275,000. Right. You got to put $55,000 down normally. You got to carry a mortgage that's going to run you almost as much as one whole salary. You know, sometimes you talk about it's affordable housing. There are a number of people out there, including me, that believe it's a question of trying to get companies to pay more to their employees.
Right. And I think if you look beyond the sales and marketing jobs at ClassPass, what you'll see are opportunities in engineering, opportunities in management,
QA,
and I think what you'll see these companies doing is providing, you know, at the end of the day, I don't speak for any of these companies, but at the end of the day, the more of these companies that are here, the more competition there will be for talent, and wages will follow.
You know,
and with any company, there's always going to be somebody who's not making as much and somebody who's making more. And the opportunity for mobility within those companies, and also if you create this ecosystem of companies, the ability for folks to move within that ecosystem, better themselves. I mean, that's an interesting thing. When people took flight to, you know, I grew up here. My high school classmates went to, some of them went to Ivies, and some of them went to
prison.
The local state
schools.
That was my cohort. But you know, those folks fled for metros where there were opportunities. We are seeing Missoula become a place of opportunity. There's critical mass around your ability to market yourself. So if you, for example, as I did today, I had a conversation with folks who fix lawnmowers. Spring, right? And almost any time I have a chance to talk with somebody in business, I say, tell me about labor. It's tough. It's really tough.
Right.
It's hard to find somebody, and it's hard to pay them enough. And those are the kind of pressures, those wage pressures are ultimately what's going to get us to a place where we have competitive wages. We're not going to be at the bottom of the rung in terms of the state wage rate. You know, someone once told me, and I think I've told you guys this before, any house is affordable if you can pay for it.
Right.
And so so a piece of the puzzle is increasing wages, and other, right. And the flip side of that is we need to work on housing inventory in Missoula, and we're working on that as well. It's none of it happens overnight, but
It is a smart strategy. I mean, coal jobs are coal jobs, and natural resources jobs and service jobs. But technology jobs now are so competitive that if companies want quality people, they're going to have to pay a lot of money for them. I mean, I was just reading about. I'm fascinated with the whole cryptocurrency and coin mining, which is really just, you know, intensive data collection and data mining. And there's only like 2,000 or 3,000 people in the whole world that are good at that. You know, so we have a place here in Bonner, and they're going to put one in Anaconda. I say to the people there that I talk to,
there's another one on reserve.
Yeah, where are you going to find the talent? You know, those people are making $250,000 that can do that, and they can live anywhere. If they go to San Francisco, they ask for $500,000. Can we train? Can Missoula College now train the cadre that are needed for these companies that are moving here?
There is that training opportunity, and again, what happens as the system develops? We get to figure out ways to be thoughtful and responsive. So last week at this Innovate UM conference, the city and the university made a commitment to this innovation corridor. We made a commitment to planning together, which is a step in ensuring that we're moving together in the right direction. These are two institutions that aren't often known for their agility, but I think we have the kind of leadership and momentum both at the university and I hope here at the city and in the community, right? There is some urgency around doing this stuff better and right and thinking about it differently and talking about it. You know, we're taking down, I'll quote Scott Wittenberg, who talks about blurring the lines of the University of Montana campus. And for a long time, we've drawn a hard line at Arthur and the Clark Fork River, and successful places aren't doing that. Those lines get blurred. There can be training happening. You can have University of Montana students who are getting credit while training at any one of these tech companies, and everybody wins as a function of that. And it can happen in healthcare. It can happen in social services. It can happen
across the board. Sure. We always have students.
So how can the city help the university? We know the university can help, you know, the city in general. The city, they can train more, you know, more targeted, you know, create more targeted training programs. Yeah. They can help, you know, blur the lines. But what can the city do to help the university?
I can work with the university to plan in a way that we never have a wrestling match over a golf course again, that we can use existing infrastructure to build new stuff, bricks and mortar, and also create an environment where a classroom might be downtown, it might be experiential. You might be able to live in the same place where you go to school. You might be able to live, work, and go to school at the same time. We can start thinking about everything we do programmatically, I think, differently. So we relied a little bit on this. We had three guests from Finland, a community called Espoo, very near Helsinki, and that community has co-located municipal folks, university folks, and private sector folks, and they are planning and working together every day, and they're recognizing opportunities to, again, blur those lines. How do we transfer tech or ideas out of the University of Montana, turn them into businesses?
Is that going to help, do you think, reverse the enrollment decline at the university?
I think there are a lot of things that can help reverse the enrollment decline, and a piece of it is really about doing all of this differently.
Mm-hmm.
You know, respecting the institution, understanding the nature of academia, recognizing core competencies, and capitalizing on those, but also looking, you know, we have to be in a position where we experiment and fail once in a while. And I think we have been collectively a little bit risk averse, and hell, we got nothing to lose today, right. I think. And
well, I think that showed itself, not to point fingers at this point, because it's past history, but I think that showed itself a little bit when the John Krakauer book came out, right? And for his own marketing purposes, I mean, if you read the book is not, it's not a diatribe against Missoula, Montana, but most people don't read the book. If you're a mother of a daughter who is looking to go to college and you Google, you know, University of Montana over the last 3 years, something pops up about Krakauer's book, which for our listeners who haven't read it, it says Missoula, you know, what is it, rape culture in a college town, essentially, is what it says. And if this was in place, I think at that time, we maybe as a community could have taken a more aggressive response to the situation, because, you know, if you go back right even today in Google, there's no article that says Missoula's numbers are better than most places. You know, this is a common phenomena. The percentages and all that. I mean, the text of the book, nobody reads. They read the headline.
Right.
You know, and we could have maybe done a better job, and maybe we still have time to do a better job to counteract that.
Communication is always critical, right? And it doesn't need to be calculated, and it doesn't need to be based on spin. We actually have a whole bunch of good stories to tell, and the best people to tell those stories are the folks who have elected to live here. So we just did a citizen survey, statistically valid. 80% of people who responded to the survey who live in the city of Missoula said they believe their quality of life is good or excellent. That's 80% in a place like this. There are municipalities who would kill for
80% is fantastic. I mean,
80% of people being generally happy with the place they live.
You can call it Sweden now,
right? So we start with a lot of advantages, and in some ways, like every other community, we can be our own worst enemies and hide our light under a bushel. And the more success stories we have, I don't know that Bozeman's got anything going on that we don't have going on. No. It's just,
well, the university's a little different. It's oriented differently than ours is, per se, right? And we talked about that when we spoke with Seth Bodner back in January.
Right.
Right? But, you know.
But we have a good story to tell. I mean, I don't think we do. Ann Arbor or Lansing or a lot of other communities that are university kind of, Oxford, Ohio, or Miami of Ohio, I don't think they have a better story to tell than we do.
I agree, but I think look, my son goes to school at MSU, and I know a lot of people that do business down in Bozeman.
You need to leave my office right now.
Going to the lacrosse championships this weekend, by the way.
Yeah.
But moreover, the students and the business people are very aligned. Like, they feel like, to the point of blurred lines, it feels that way down there. It feels like the university is just an extension of some of these businesses and vice versa. And I think that that's important. That makes, first of all, the student has greater assuredness that they're going to get a job when they graduate, and this investment leads to something. But also, it's a philosophy. It feels like it's indoctrinated. You know, the people feel that way. How do we do that?
Well, it is a cultural change. And you know, in some ways, I think we can, oddly enough, model this after the athletic program. So ain't nobody went to a football game in Missoula, Montana when I was a kid. You went to basketball games.
Mm-hmm.
And
lady basketball games, too.
Right.
Lady Grizz.
And what changed that program, what changed the interest in that program was the facility. So not everything is about bricks and mortar, but we create facilities that people recognize as world class and provide opportunity and show respect for students and faculty. You know, Seth and I have had this conversation, and it's what's the entrance to the University of Montana? Well, you got to work pretty hard to figure it out. And if you're a prospective student right. and you want to enroll, you got to go through a maze at the Lamason Center to figure it out. You really kind of want to have to want to go, and we can do some of that. We can do some of that sort of low hanging fruit stuff. But the other piece here is that we create interesting educational opportunities that allow you to be part of the community while getting your education rather than
right.
working as a barista and then going back to campus. And, right,
that's an old model. That's not the 21st right. century.
We can integrate, and I think we have, you know, I think we have leadership and enthusiasm, and the business community and the broader community is very interested in this. And
I mean, we have world-class companies, and beside this, you know, I mean, you have the all of the companies that are part of the Washington companies here.
Absolutely,
there's, you know, there's transportation companies and construction companies and diamond, you know, the family owns a diamond mine. I mean, there's plenty of opportunities. Healthcare.
There are healthcare companies here. There are regional medical centers here. There are labs here. We've got biotech. We have a really interesting economy, and it's not based on one thing. We're out of the business of if the mill closes down,
the town closes down.
Yeah, we're in trouble.
But we also have a need, and I think you understand. We also have a need with all the construction and growth and expansion for electricians and welders and all those sorts of things.
Absolutely,
you know, and those are
trade.
Know, trade jobs are important.
I had a conversation with trade unions last week about improving apprenticeship programs, right? Getting folks trained, and it's no secret, and it's repeated often. Not everybody's going to graduate from a 4-year college.
Well, 30% of Americans graduate from a 4-year college,
but that doesn't mean that you can't have a life. And
a good paying job.
And a good paying job. And a satisfying good paying job. So are we exposing folks to enough opportunities? And you know, one of the suggestions I made last week is an apprenticeship program, if you don't know what it is, you don't know what it is. So how do we create sort of navigators so that a kid can glom onto a navigator, and that navigator can say, here are all the opportunities available to you, and I will help you.
Right.
I will help you sort through this, because it's all pretty daunting. It's all there, but it's daunting. We look at single point of entry in almost everything we do, right? So why don't we look at single point of entry for education in our community? When you walk onto the University of Montana campus, or if you walk into a kiosk at City Hall,
one-stop shopping.
You can understand what the opportunities are in this community to better your life.
Well, how about how about just the public education system here?
Absolutely. I mean,
for some people that are never going to go to a 4-year college, but it's really important that they meet up with the right people early on,
or
so that when they
or
leave,
somebody goes and gets a degree and then finds out they want to do something else. I have a nephew
right.
who has a 4-year degree from a good school. He decides he wants to be into real estate or construction management. He yeah. didn't learn that in college. Most colleges don't offer a
He
degree.
Found out that that's what he wanted
to do. He found out what he wants to do, and now he's trying to figure out how does he learn about that.
Do you
somewhere?
Feel, Mayor, that there are still people that hold on to the old days, right? Like there is a fear of the unknown and a fear of kind of going into uncomfortable areas. I'm talking about...
Absolutely.
And how do you, as kind of, you're the leader, right? You're the community leader. How do you help them say, hey, there's nothing to fear because here's where the opportunity lies?
Well, so for one thing, we talk about it, and we try to talk about it fairly relentlessly. You know, most of what we do in municipal government, and I'll use the example of a subdivision. I have heard countless public hearings around subdivisions, and they almost always go the same way. Neighbors are concerned about traffic, they're concerned about noise, they're concerned about neighborhood character, they're concerned about overcrowding. Developer always points to need for housing,
parking.
You have, yeah, right. You
school,
have
to, it affects schools. Right?
You have to have level of density for this project to pencil. You're going to do X, Y, and Z. City's rules are onerous and makes it more expensive. At the end of the day, what happens is a subdivision is approved, and it's never as bad as the neighbors thought, and it's never as good as the developer promised. It's changed.
Right, right.
And so a lot of what we can do to assuage fear is to demonstrate success, right? So, and it can be something as simple as, or as complicated, I guess, depending on the way you look at it, as Russell Street, right? So there had been a fear that reconstruction of Russell Street will create a new reserve street that will be largely impassable. So we'll create another barrier in the community and another traffic nightmare, and it'll be horrible. I think when we get the thing built, what folks will say is, wow, I'm really glad you got that built. And it turns out that
it was horrible before you did it.
Right. So. And it turns out that it accommodates more than cars. And it also creates opportunity for redevelopment and business and housing and prosperity. And why don't we do a little more of that? Because that one really looks good.
Yeah.
Right?
Let me switch gears a little bit and follow up on what you just said. With growth and expansion and just the aging of any kind of infrastructure, you need money to build all this infrastructure.
Yep.
From what I understand, and this may not be, I'm just looking from the outside, the federal infrastructure monies require 80% local cash match. They're only putting up 20% of the money. Where do we get the money to put in all the things we need here?
Yeah, and it really depends, and it's project based. The short version is that we have billions of dollars of need and millions of dollars of money.
Right.
And in some cases, we are capable of coming up with that match. So we have to be really thoughtful about where we make the investment. We have to be thoughtful about taking care of what is already on the ground. And then we have to leverage each one of those projects has to have more than one winner, right?
Right.
So Russell Street isn't just about moving cars and bikes and humans. It's about creating a place where business and community activity can happen, and that grows tax base. That investment helps municipal coffers, mm-hmm. state coffers, school coffers, and provides additional opportunity for reinvestment. The most interesting thing, in my opinion, to come out of the Republican tax bill is a program called the Opportunity Zone. It's the investment community is really interested in it because folks are starting to get dialed in. The short version is that this is a tax credit program for folks who would pay a significant portion of whatever their capital gain might be from some success they've had. This tax credit shelters a lot of that capital gain.
Offsets it.
Yeah, this will be. In the state of Montana, this will be hundreds of millions of dollars of new money that investors, private investors, will make.
It'll be like free money for them. They'll be.
It is free money for them, and it's safe free money. So what we're going to see is you know, wherever we can make some. Important investment in infrastructure, we're going to see that investment multiplied over and over again by private investment. You look at, you know, we've had some minor criticism over our construction of Mary Street from Brooks to Reserve Street through Southgate Mall. That investment in that road, which connects Brooks and Reserve, which is actually a good thing, wasn't built entirely for the purpose of the mall, but it's going to help the mall a hell of a lot. and you've already seen significant investment in the mall, the new owner is thrilled with that road, and they're going to make more
investment.
Well,
I think of it as like a great shortcut. It's not totally discovered yet by everyone.
Right.
But you come up Reserve on Mary, you can just zip right into the mall without a stoplight.
Right. So those simple investments, those simple and relatively small investments in infrastructure that we make pay huge dividends over time. It's like buying a water company and making sure that the pipes don't leak. If you have that kind of infrastructure in place, you get confidence from the development community that their investment is safe. A community that's not reinvesting in itself is a bad bet.
How do you help? It's a good question, actually. How do you help with the optics? Because not every development or investment is sexy, right? Is like attractive to, you know, this citizen. So how do you kind of help them understand, hey, this is why we're doing this. This is what the impact it'll have.
You know, if somebody can crack that nut, Scott, I'd be grateful. We haven't cracked it. We do our best to tell the story over and over again, and it turns out it's factual. But, you know, there's a percentage of folks who just are never going to trust what government does at any level.
Right.
The best we can do is show that over time our investments make a difference. If you look at, I trot this out all the time, and it's an old story. Downtown Missoula is the way it is today because we invested about $20 million over the course of 25 years, something like that, in downtown Missoula that leveraged another $200 million worth of investment. It's a long game, and there's a lot of stuff that we do that's not particularly sexy.
Right, right, right.
But we are greater than the sum of our parts.
Right. And you need that because as homegrown businesses grow and new companies find their way here, like ClassPass would say, don't tell anybody else, you know, those businesses spur all kinds of other businesses that support them. So you need the expanded infrastructure to be able to support all of those other kinds of, you know, we have a Lucky's Market opening, you know, this week. It wouldn't be, we have plenty of grocery stores. I'm assuming they did their study and showed there was a need, a growing town, to put another grocery store in town, and it'll probably do well. Yeah. Everybody's doing pretty well.
Yeah. So I can say with confidence in year 13 of being mayor and year 53 of living in Missoula, Montana, that we're discovered.
Yeah.
And as I suggested to folks last week, we will never control growth. We can guide it. And we can guide that through investment, and we can guide that through planning, and we can guide that by building relationships and making sure that when ClassPass comes to Missoula, they have a sense of Missoula values.
Mm.
And when Submittable, an existing tech company, welcomes ClassPass to the ecosystem, they have a relationship and shared values.
And help each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Missoula's pretty good. We're pretty good at having all oars in the water while not necessarily rowing in time. And I think we're getting much closer to rowing in time. It won't stop us from being weird.
We like being weird.
Right. Any of the other things that are...
Well, a town has to have character.
Right.
And we have character.
It definitely has character, but it's a good segue to your whole strategic planning, right? Yeah. Now, that's something you put in place recently or a couple of years ago to really get ahead of when you start going into budgeting. There's a plan in place.
Right.
So that you're following a plan, and it's in a plan that people understand, right? Hopefully.
Yeah.
As many people as possible. Why did you tell us about that process of putting the strategic planning in place?
So we've had a strategic plan in place for a long time, and what we do is an annual iteration of that, right? And one of the things that I wanted to do this year that was a little bit different is I get some data points, right, every 4 years that suggest we're moving in a direction. Actually, we get them every 2 years, and those happen during municipal elections. So I get a sense of where the community wants to go based on who they elect, and what those people stand for, what their stump speeches are about, what they do when they're in office. I get a sense of what people are interested in when I campaign for office, when I do what I do, and I either get reelected or I don't get reelected. So I've got that data set. But I wanted a statistical survey that helped me understand, apart from folks who self-select to come to a city council meeting. I'm glad they do. Their input is valuable. But there are a whole lot of folks who aren't going to come to a city council meeting
right.
or pick up the phone to tell the mayor what the hell they think is going on.
And they still have opinions.
Right. So we dialed thousands and thousands of folks. We ended up talking with more than 600. We ended up with a survey sample of 600. And those folks told us, I told you about the quality of life piece, but we wanted to know a little bit more. Tell me what are the pressing issues for you today?
Right.
And not surprisingly, property taxes, housing, and streets.
Which is interesting because what wasn't mentioned is like things that a lot of other cities deal with, like crime.
Right.
Crime does not
actually
come.
Crime, police, and fire got high marks.
They got high marks, which
it's credit to you.
Well, it's a credit to us as a community,
right.
And it speaks to the fact that we look at the fundamentals, but we don't stop at the fundamentals, and I think that's the secret to all of this is you move beyond what you're expected to do well. And try to make sure that you're doing well in select areas where you can really move a community forward.
Let me switch gears just a second here. We just threw out the issue of schools. You know, Missoula has a growing school age population. We're living at a time where school shootings are happening in lots of communities. We've had some false alarms here and some threats here. What do you think we ought to be doing? And are we doing it in order to make sure the schools are safe in Missoula?
Well, so we have a Missoula police officer who works directly with the school system, with Missoula County Public Schools, to work on safety all day. We have officers in the schools. They're called community resource officers, school resource officers, and those officers are there to provide support and
are
safety.
Are they armed?
Yes. Yep, and we're diligent. In this community and every community across the United States, you walk this fine line between creating an atmosphere of security and fear or security and openness, and it's a fine line. And
when I was a kid, they made us go under our desks to protect ourselves from atomic bomb attacks.
Exactly. Uh-huh. Duck and cover, baby.
Duck and cover.
Let's do a quick housekeeping. Let's take a quick break. Our guest is Mayor John Engen. We're in his lovely offices here on Ryman and Spruce. Back after this.
Arnie, that was part one with Mayor Engen.
You know, we covered a lot of interesting topics, and you know, one that's close to both of our hearts is, you know, the last, you know, part of our first segment talking about schools and school violence and how do you prepare and, you know, whether you have guns in school. We do have. I think most people would be surprised.
Right.
In a town that a lot of people like to characterize as liberal or, you know, weeds and seeds or whatever, that we have armed officers in our schools.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and you know, fortunately, knock wood, you know, we haven't had any major incident that, you know, that we know about, but we have to be ever vigilant, and we have to continue to work and train our police and students and parents. We had the school safety officer on an earlier show.
Sure.
Talking about the ongoing effort to try to make sure that you know, schools aren't, you know, aren't armed prisons. You don't want to put your kid in that kind of a learning environment. And you don't want him to feel threatened at any given point or feel uncomfortable. I mean, they're there to learn. They're not there to be warehoused.
Right.
And I think the mayor, you know, is bringing up a good point that it's an important responsibility of the mayor and the superintendent of schools, Mark Thain, to work jointly and together, and hopefully in the future more closely together.
And working with the state, too.
And working with the state to make sure that we have done everything that's humanly possible to make school a good learning experience for our kids.
I agree with you. And Arnie, everyone, you should tune in next week where we pick up the conversation with Mayor Engen, where we start to talk a lot more about what the future looks like for Missoula.
That's what I'm concerned about.
I am too. And we will see you next week, Arnie.
Take care, Scott.
Thank you for listening to What Do You Know?
I can't wait for the next show, Scott.
I'm excited too, Arnie. If you'd like to suggest a guest, send me an email at scottrichman@townsquaremedia.com. We'll see you next week. And thanks for listening to News Talk KGVO.